there will be no GT Factory racing next year. And I was like, guys, I'm really trying to get going here. When you lose yourself so hard, you're like, who even am I? I get to the bottom of the hill, I'm having a major crisis, and I'm like, I need to get out of here because I don't know what's going on. And they're like, we need to take you to doping control. And I was like, what are you taking me for? I was like, are you serious? I was like, I pretty much come last in this race. Like, what do you want to check for? Because whatever it is, it's not working, I can tell you. Oh, I've got plans, Chris. I've got plans. I've got big goals already.
Hey everyone, I'm Chris Hall and this is the Downtime Podcast, where we're going to be taking you deeper than ever into the gravity-based side of mountain biking. First up, some quick messages from our supporting partners, Canyon and Wahoo. Are you looking for a new ride? Well, the Canyon Trail Sale has started so that you can shred for less and save big on your next bike. With no better way to start your season than with a brand new world-class mountain bike, you can save up to 30% on your dream Canyon. Head over to canyon.com now to find out more. Wahoo Fitness are the ultimate companion for all your mountain biking challenges. In taking on the Enduro World Series, Stone King Rally and downhill racing, Wahoo has been my go-to brand for training, racing and riding. Their Kicker indoor trainer has been an absolute game changer, whether I'm getting those Winter Zone 2 miles done or smashing out an interval session. With precision power and intensity control, based on Wahoo's cutting-edge fitness tests like the Full Frontal 40P and the Half Monty Ramp Test, I know I'm always getting the most effective workouts possible. And with seamless connectivity to their system online training platform, tailored training plans are just a click away, perfectly aligned with my goals and schedule. But Wahoo isn't just about training. Their bike computers, the Element, Bolt and Roam have become essential riding companions. They're robust and reliable, enabling me to track my rides and see my progress. With Wahoo's approach to continuous improvement through free software updates, it means they keep getting better. And now Wahoo is taking things to the next level with their biggest feature update yet. With Wahoo's latest integrations, you can be controlling your music directly from your bike computer, and very soon you'll be able to do the same with your GoPro too. Imagine being able to start and stop your GoPro right from your bike computer and see if it's recording or not, so there's no more post-ride regrets when you realise you forgot to hit record. You'll even be able to change your GoPro mode and profile right there on your handlebars. Good work, Wahoo. Head over to wahoofitness.com now and discover how Wahoo can help you. Okay, just a couple of quick things before we get stuck into this week's episode. First up, make sure you never miss an episode by following the podcast. Hit the follow button in your podcast app now, or you'll find dedicated buttons for all the major platforms at downtimepodcast.com/follow. You can keep up to date with what's going on by following us on Instagram and Facebook, where we're at Downtime Podcast. And if you're hungry for more downtime, then you can join the newsletter at downtimepodcast.com/newsletter. If you want to help support the show, you can join our Patreon over at downtimepodcast.com/Patreon or grab yourself some merch from downtimepodcast.com/shop. Also, if you want to watch today's episode, you can check out the podcast on YouTube at youtube.com/@downtimepodcast. I'd love it if you head over there, subscribe to the channel and show the video some love via likes and comments. All the links I've mentioned will be in the show notes for this episode on the website downtimepodcast.com. All right, today we're joined by Katie Winton. In this episode, Katie opens up about her journey through burnout, the unexpected end of GT Factory racing, and the reality of trying to find a team in the current economic climate. But fear not, Katie's resilience shines through as she shares how she's navigated these changes and challenges and found fulfillment outside of the tape. Hear how Katie is getting on with working a 9-to-5 and how she's going to be working with Crankworx to help elevate the event coverage too. I'll also be asking Katie about her plans for 2024. As always, Katie brings an open and honest chat with heaps of energy. So without further ado, here's Katie Winton. Katie Winton, welcome back to the Downtime Podcast. It's been a wee while. How's life on the other side of the world? You're a bit ahead of us.
Thanks for having me back. Yeah, I'm over in New Zealand in Queenstown and it's 8 o'clock at night and the sun's gone down on another day. But can't complain. The sun's been out. It's good.
Yeah, well, that's something we've not had for a little while, but hopefully we'll be heading into that pretty soon. Well, let's wind things back. So we sat down on a couple of occasions last year. You interviewed me about Stone King Rally, and we chatted a bit about like what was going on in the EDR. But what we didn't talk about was some of the stuff that you went through in 2022, because I think it was still pretty fresh and you were probably, to some extent, kind of still dealing with it and working through it. But yeah, so looking from the outside, you'd had a tough 2021, you'd created your own program with Moxie 11 and kind of made things work. off the back of that, you got the ride on GT Factory Racing coming into 2022. You kicked off the season with a couple of top tens, which is impressive coming back, you know, onto a team, getting familiar with a new bike. Like, looking as a fan from the outside, like, I guess everything looked pretty rosy. But behind the scenes, it wasn't, that wasn't the story, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. It seems like a distant memory now. Just having gone through such a major shift, but yeah, at the end of 21 and hitting 22, it's all kind of surreal. Like, I can't even believe that that was actually what happened. You know, it's like, you couldn't write it. Like, you couldn't write the last few years. So it's definitely been a journey. It's been surreal. And yeah, yeah, rough 2022 for sure.
Yeah, so you did the first few races, and then you made like a public announcement to say that you were stepping back and taking some time away from racing. Can you, yeah, talk us through a little bit, like, how we got to that point and what, how did that decision come about for you?
So 2021, doing everything myself, plus it being COVID as well. So I wasn't just organizing everything. I was also organizing everything and managing travel when every border was changing at the same time too. So it was like all of this stuff, also trying to fight for my career to try and keep that alive, not get injured, make it through the year. And that COVID stress on top of like being like, well, who knows what's going to happen? Like, are the bike brands going to invest in racing in the future or not? Who knows? And just trying to stay relevant. You know, I was getting older within the sport, but I felt like I still had a lot to give. And I knew what I was capable of, because I got a glimpse of that in 2020 before it all collapsed. So I was chasing what I knew I could potentially do. And in 2021, I wanted to keep that opportunity alive. So when I signed for GT in 2022, I was like, sweet, this is my chance now. I've got everything I need. Not realizing the impact that 21 had really had on me in a lot of ways. I think you carry a lot of, you know, beliefs from when you were younger and stuff like that, and I got really bogged down in some bits and pieces in 21 that I still needed to work through. And then 22, change everything, like change your frame, change the bike, change the people around you, change everything. And although I had everything I needed, like on paper to perform, it was such a major shift on top of still trying to recover from what was a really hard year. And I didn't recover, basically, and was so on a mission, continued on that mission to prove that I could do this and that I was worth being paid to be an athlete and that I could be one of the top in the world again. You know, having been third, I knew, you know, I was still chasing that win. And so I was like, I know I can still do this. And I just have, since I've been young, had all eyes on being world champion. That's been my main mission. And I would do anything to do that. And I was like, right, okay, now we've got everything. This is a new challenge, right? We're going to do this, 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 and this to try and sort it out. But that's an incredibly intense way to live, to be chasing that. And when I hadn't recovered properly from an extremely stressful year in 2021, I started to really get deep in a hole where I have never been before, ever in my life, to the point where I was like, I don't even know who I am anymore. Like, I'm that kind of drive that I just explained is such a big part of me. And my worst point, it was gone. Uh-huh. And I was like, oh, I don't know who this is. Like, I don't know who I am, because that's been me the whole time. Even when things haven't been so good, there's always been a little bit of like, oh, but maybe this, or like, you know, why don't we just try that? Or I can still see a way that we can make it to where we want to go. At the worst point, I was like, I know where I want to go, but there, I cannot see a way to get there. And I don't know what I'm going to do about it. And then riding down the stage in Petten, most horrible experience of my whole life, I was riding down the hill, last stage, and I gave up. And I was like, whoa, because I don't give up. Do you know what I mean? I go to the bitter end. It doesn't matter what the result is. It doesn't matter how bad it's been. I will give everything, no matter if it's like there's nothing in the tank, that will just give whatever is left. And I just started riding down the hill. And I was like, wow, who is this? this is not good. And the worst part of this whole story is I get to the bottom of the hill, I'm having a major crisis, and I'm like, I need to get out of here because I don't know what's going on. And they're like, we need to take you to doping control. And I was like, what are you taking me for? I was like, are you serious? I was like, I pretty much come last in this race. Like, what do you want to check for? Because whatever it is, it's not working, I can tell you. So then I had to go and sit in doping control while just being like, oh my God, I don't know what I'm going to do. I don't know who this is. Like, I'm so lost. I'm so broken. I felt so broken. I was like, wow. Like, I don't know what to do. And I was really lucky because I had a really good team around me. Like, between my physical coach, our team manager, and my mental performance coach, Alan, we could all come together and have a conversation and be like, this is not working and you are not okay. And together as a collective, we are deciding that the best course of action is you take some time out and take some rest and recovery. And GT was on board with that as well. It's like, okay, you're injured. You need to rest. Like, any, and I always think the way I thought about it was that this is like an overuse injury. I've overused my grit and determination to the point of explosion. And end with any overuse injury, you rest it initially, and then you find out, okay, what's the cause? How have we got to this point? And how do we rehab back? Like, how do we bring you back gently? But that's, so it's exactly the same thing. And I think the taboo around all of this stuff can make it, I don't know, harder to talk about, harder to for people to understand. But when you relate it like that, it's very, very simple. And so I was really stoked and like just honored to be with a brand that could see that and honor that and go, yes, like, we want you to, and we believe in you to perform at your best. And so you do what you need to do. And so immediately, I'm pretty good like this in terms of knowing what I need. And I knew, okay, if I'm going to rest, I need to take the rest of the season off, as in have no plans to come back, because I will not be able to rest if I know that I've got to come back for a particular race, because I'll be like, I need to start preparing. If all this time waiting now is time wasted, because I could be preparing. So we took that off the table and I went into recovery phase and did a lot of work with my mental performance coach, just sort of going through everything, because he'd been there through the whole 2021. And we just went back to the complete basics, re-established a much healthier relationship with racing, like, just, you know, really went to like the core of like, why are you even doing this? Like, what is your purpose? Because clearly why you were doing this before has led you to this point, because it's pushed you beyond what was okay. So how do you have a better relationship with it? Because I had realized that the way I was doing things had got me so far, but it wasn't allowing me to progress any further than where I was, which was frustrating. And also, you know, there's a way your body, your mind, whatever, will put a stop to you if you're doing it wrong. This is not actually working. You need to try another way. And so this was like, okay, that didn't work. How are we going to do it now? And so it gave me the opportunity to really reflect and realign in a much better way. It was like a leveling up, I suppose. And it was awesome. Like, it was so awesome. It was horrendous. Like, it was absolutely horrendous. I was in a really bad way and it was very confusing and it was horrible to even like look at anybody or speak to anybody about it, because it was like, I don't even know what's going on here. Like, initially I was like, I don't even understand it. It doesn't make any sense to me. I just know I'm not okay and I can't ride my bike down that hill in any shape or form. And but the comeback from that was awesome in terms of like how much better I felt and how much of a better relationship I had with racing, and the opportunity to go, okay, we're taking this time off, we're going to strip everything back, and I mean physically everything, back to basics. We're going to go check if the body's okay, make sure everything's in line, and then build from the ground up. This is a chance. Like, if any major injury, you know, you break your back or whatever, you start from the basics, right from the beginning. You build everything back up piece by piece by piece by piece. And I was like, right, I've got the opportunity to do that. Let's do it and crack on. So it's like hellish, but an opportunity to come back stronger.
Yeah. How long was that, like, the mental performance aspect? Like, it feels like it, you guys were almost sort of picking apart your like your core programming and kind of putting it back together in a better way for you. Was that like a few hour sessions? Was it weeks of work? Like, how does something like that actually happen?
Years.
Okay.
So like Alan knew me from 2021. He came on board when I was losing my mind trying to do everything myself, and he helped manage me through that. So he was getting to know me essentially at my worst, because I was under such high strain and stress for such an extended period of time. And he knew me at that point, and then could see where I got to by 22. And so together, you know, he got to know me a lot by that point. And the way he works is more about who I am as a person rather than like the athletic performance side of things. It's like, how do you manage yourself, and how do you turn up and show up, and how do you react to other people, and, you know, how do you manage other people, and just all of this, like a much bigger emotional intelligence scenario. And I believe as well that if you've got that base of understanding around yourself and others, you can then build from there all the other mm-hmm. stuff on top of that, because you can manage your emotions and understand, okay, I'm stressed now, this is probably what's going to happen, or I understand now, you know, it's just a much bigger base understanding. And so all of those years of working together, we could piece together all the different pieces of the puzzle to be like, okay, let's okay, wait, so you can see what's happened here now, and this is how we're going to sort of unravel it. And now that we've got the space and time, because we're not focusing on racing, we can actually lay a better foundation here. So that's mm-hmm. that's what we did.
Cool. So that process, I guess, would have been longer had you not already been working with someone like Alan, right? You had that benefit of having him knowing you pretty well, so that you could leap straight into kind of, okay, he understands me, now let's work out what we sort of reprogram and what we change. Whereas I guess if you'd come in fresh with him, that would have taken a bit longer maybe.
Yeah, I think so, for sure. I also don't think I would have even got to that point.
I
don't know how I would have even got through 2021. Do you know what I mean? And yeah, yeah, 2021. So he was definitely a huge, huge part of my general survival until that point. And then it was just, mm-hmm. everything was just all too much. So yeah, I think definitely having that base knowledge of knowing each other for that long as well is really, really good.
Yeah. So you've got that, I guess, the mental side and the, mm-hmm. yeah, your values and what underpins you and drives you coming from Alan. What other stuff was there in there? I guess we've covered maybe to some extent the mental side, but what about like the physical side of that recovery process? Because burnout is like, it's both, right? It's mental and physical. It's not just one or the other, I think.
Yeah, I think I've had physical burnout before. And then this was definitely more mental, like way more mental, which I think then like passes through onto the body. But this was definitely more mental. Like I just couldn't access. So when I ride down a hill, I can just get into that flow state and just push and push and push. But I just couldn't, like my brain was shutting down my body. It was basically like, no, you're not letting go down that hill, because if you crash, we will die. Like, that's what it was like. That's for the extreme. That's what it was like. It was like, it was so deep in survival mode. It was just like, no, don't move. Don't do anything. You're just like, we're just full survival. You need to stop doing what you're doing immediately. Any risk thing. It's just like when that stress level is so high, and when you're riding down a hill, you're at risk. It's a risky thing to do. But when you're in a relaxed and happy state, you just roll with it, because you're allowing it to happen, and you get lost in that. And it's just like, that's the dream. That's literally what I live for. And I couldn't get like, but when you're stressed, you can't do that, because you're like, no, everything's scary. You're like, oh, rocks, roots, oh. Like, even if you're not thinking that, your brain is reacting like that. It's like, no, this is really, really bad news. So that was more the physical side than when I had physical burnout, where I could just was one speed all the time, nothing, I couldn't operate. So I worked with Jo Blades. Well, she's Jo Varnas now, I just still call her whole name because she's Warrior Blades to me. So she's in Norway now, but she's been my osteo over all of these years, so she knows my body really well. I went over to Norway to see her and she straightened me out just to check everything was in alignment. But she's also looks at things in much more sort of a full body way of like, okay, what's your nutrition? How are we going to attack that? You know, taking out a lot of the inflammatory stuff. I got on lots of different, I was on like, was it wheat bran or something? Rice bran, flax seeds, like all this different stuff to try and help my system clear out whatever, or just all this general stress, just way too much cortisol pumping around my system. So we worked together on that. I tried some different bits and pieces to see if there was anything irritating me as well, see if I could cut any of that out, just trying to sort of help the body as much as possible. So she helped me a lot with that too. So that was like the base building of like, okay, we're going back to the core. It's like, okay, you're going to straighten my body out. We're going to look at the nutrition, then work with my coach Steve to sort of bring back training in as and when, once I was riding and happy just to go out and ride and could feel like, gradually feel more and more like myself again. And we just kind of took it from there and was just really gentle. And because I have been an athlete for so long, I know my body really well. So I know when it's all good and I know when it's too much. And so I just stayed in tune with that and just was really kind to myself. And I, to be honest, I don't remember a whole lot from those weeks. I've probably blanked them out for good. I just did what I had to do and then slowly started getting back into biking and started to see glimmers of old me. And I was like, oh, this, maybe I'm going to be all right, actually.
That's super cool. Were there any like tools or techniques that you found that helped, like people talk about kind of meditation, breath work, journaling, all that kind of stuff that helps like down regulate the body and calm and like reduce cortisol maybe, but did any of that work for you or was it more other things that helped?
I definitely used breath work. So Alan got me on one that was real good, and you breathe in through your nose like all the way, and then once you're at full like breathe in, you go, you breathe more and you go all the way up so that your chest raises. It's to do with something to do with your heart pulling further up into your rib cage, and then you let it all out and you do that for like 5 minutes or whatever. And I actually really found that calmed me down a lot, and I still use that like every so often. If I'll just tap back into that again just to like just to calm that nervous system, because essentially that's the whole thing. I was at a dysregulated nervous system. I went ape for a while, and then it's just about trying to keep it into your normal, new normal of like being relaxed. This is okay. You can just actually be relaxed and we will be all right.
Yeah, even if you think you're relaxing, your body actually isn't, I guess, when you're in that state, right? It's constantly on alert because it's worried that something bad's going to happen.
Or it's got so used to being in that state that you are, you know, trying to re-elevate it again. So you could be like, oh, for some people, it's they look at the news. You know, you look at the news, you get that cortisol spike. So that keeps you in that zone of like having triggered your nervous system, essentially. And you'll have various different ways to do it if that's part of how you actually feel comfortable is when your nervous system's been elevated. So it's quite interesting when you start to get into it all and you realize all the different ways that, and you notice it in different people. You're like, oh yeah, yeah, I see what's going on here. And yourself, and just little techniques and stuff like that, and trying to, I think that's what meditation forces you to, just actually be still with that and sort of and face the, oh, I'm really stressed right now, or all the like tension. You just have to sit with it and try and let it pass through you. So yeah, there's whole hosts of different bits and pieces there.
That's cool. Yeah, it does feel like the modern world is driving us towards losing the ability to actually relax. I think most people find relaxing a challenge because we always feel like we should be doing something. Like you say you're relaxing, but you're not. You're like on your phone or watching something on the telly. Like you're not actually relaxing. You're not properly just totally down-regulating and letting the body chill.
Yeah, like I do this thing now when I travel and I just don't look at my phone, because I think like, oh, you go and sit at a bus stop. People used to just sit at the bus stop. Do you know what I mean? You know, you're waiting for a bus or you're waiting for like a train or you're waiting for a plane. People used to just sit there. Do you know what I mean? So I'm like, right, okay, I'm just going to sit here. I'm just going to sit. I don't want to look at anything. just going to sit and just sit with it and try and do, I tried to do that as much as possible. Like when I walk to and from work, I don't listen to any music or anything like that. And I think you don't need to do specific meditation exercises if that's not what works for you, but you need to create space. That is the key. And that's up to you how you do that. Like I like chopping up vegetables.
Nothing wrong with that.
Like that's like a little bit of meditation for me because I just get lost in just chopping up my veg. Or I walk to work and I don't have any music, no nothing on. I just am. Do you know what I mean? And that's how I put it in because sometimes just sitting in the nothingness can be too much for some people and sometimes just too much for you on whatever given day. But if you make an effort to have little bits of space here and there, that can be enough.
Yeah. I heard you call it sharpening the axe. I quite like that.
Yeah. That was kind of the whole ethos around like what I was doing with taking the time out. It was like my axe is so blunt. It's like I'm literally may as well be trying to cut down a tree with a baseball bat. Do you know what I mean? Like it's that's what's happening. But the story behind that is Simon Sinek, and I'm probably saying his name wrong, but I heard the story from him. And there's two like wood chopping guys out in the forest, and they both chopping wood all day. And one of them's chopping away, and the other one disappears for an hour every day, but still cuts the same amount of wood as the other guy. The other guy is like, "All right, where are you going? And what are you doing for an hour? Because how are you still cutting the same amount of wood as me?" And he's like, "Oh, I just go away, sharpen my axe." And that really hit home to me because I was like, you need to make time and space for other things that are important to you as a person that sharpen your axe so you can do your job better. And that is actually important. And this is sharpening your axe in order for you to do your job better. Like really hammering that home rather than being like, can't possibly do that because that is not for the job. It's like, yes, it is. Yes, totally. It is. Yeah. And in fact, if you were doing all that other stuff, then you wouldn't be here.
Such a simple way to reframe it, eh? Because it can be quite hard to like get your head around it. But when you speak to it like that, it's like, well, it's a no-brainer. I need some time to chill.
Yeah, especially when you're somebody that wants to get the job done and you want to do it really well. And you want to, you know, and also where a culture of like, you must work hard all the time. You must always work hard. An endless hard work, and it's like yes, you must, but you also must actually take some time off so you can work that hard consistently over a long period of time, because the consistent hard work is actually the key, not just working hard for a bit, blowing up, you know, work hard again, blow up, you know, that is not consistent.
Definitely. Have you found it hard to like keep some of these changes in place, like how, like KE 2.0, let's call her, like how easy do you find it? Because I can imagine, certainly looking at it from my experience and personality, it's very easy to revert to what you were, and sometimes hard to remember why you've made these changes and to stick with them. Like how have you found it, you know, let's say we're a year or so on from the worst of that like burnout period for you?
I think that really came from the work I did with Alan around what my whole purpose was for what I was doing racing for. And I just wanted to win before. That's all I wanted. I just wanted to win, and I would do anything to try and win. That was it. Like I was just fully focused on. And it wasn't even so much as like, I must win or this is a failure. It was just, I want to go for that absolute top step, and whatever I get as a result of that kind of work required for that kind of performance will be enough. Do you know what I mean? Because I know I'll have put in enough work to try and win. And I know that that will have been my best, but like, I want to win. And we changed that completely. And I don't to this day still know how we did it, but we did it so that my brain just completely switched, because people used to say, oh, you just need to go out and try your best. And I was just like, try my best? Nah, that just sounds so wishy-washy nonsense. Like, I just want to win. Like, I don't try my best.
I'm just trying your best.
No, I'm going to try and win. I just want to try and win. And if I win, great. If I don't, at least I tried to win, not just tried to put my best in. Like, rubbish. Anyway, I just could never, like, it just never sit with me. So we worked on it, and it was, I just became real curious about what was possible. which is actually the same as wanting to win, because it was like, I don't know if I can win or not, but I'm shooting for the moon and you might hit a star. It's that kind of scenario. So it's like, then I just became curious about what's possible. I don't know what I'm capable of, but I'm real curious about it. And I'm real curious about if I nail all this training, what's going to happen. And so it completely changed everything. Like, it's so mad. And I got real excited about racing again. I was always excited about racing, but it came with this kind of like, that kind of hyped energy, you know, that stress energy, because you're like, ooh, win, you know, that kind of aggression. Whereas when you're curious, you're just like, comes with like sort of a quiet confidence of like, cool, let's just go see what's possible. Like, I don't know what I can do, but I've done all my training and I've nailed all my sleeping and all my eating and stuff, and I've got good people and a good bike. So why don't we just go see what we can do? And that, I just was loving it. And it took away this whole thing of like, not comparison to other people, but like wanting to beat other people or feeling that stress of like, I need to keep my place within the team or blah, blah, blah. You know, you're always fighting for a position because you can get dropped at any moment. I know that better than anybody. And I just took that away because it was like, you just became curious. You said, oh, well, we're just going to see what's possible. And then just see what happens. You take that pressure off of like trying to make it happen and just go, well, just see what happens.
That's sweet. How was it then coming back? So you came back in 2023, second year with GT Factory Racing, with this curiosity, this kind of reprogrammed version of yourself. And I'm guessing both in a better state physically and mentally than you'd been for a few years at least. Mm. How did it feel coming back? Like, how did you approach it?
I was terrified, eh? I was absolutely terrified. I have never been more nervous in my life. Like, I was so scared because I knew, I was like, and as much as I had all that curiosity and stuff like that, it was crunch time because it was like, cool, well, you've done all the work. You've done all the work. And I don't know how this is actually, like, I'm curious, but it maybe you're just not that fast anymore. Do you know what I mean? That was a real, like, maybe you've just lost it. And I was really scared of that, even though I knew I was riding well and I felt good. Like, I was like, yeah, I just don't know. And I think that's a sort of massively overlooked part of racing, is that vulnerability of putting yourself out there. Like, every time you race, you're putting yourself out there to people to sort of judge your performance, judge you as an athlete, you to judge yourself, and that, you know, have those expectations. But it's out there for the world to see. It's not like you go and do your 5K and put the time down and go, oh, well, I suck this year. Do you know what I mean? Because it's only you that knows.
Yeah.
But like, you put that out to everybody and someone's paying you to do a good job, and you may have done everything perfectly and it just doesn't add up or things don't go right. Like, it's high stress. So anyway, yeah, it was really nerve-wracking coming back to that first one and putting down like I was like 18th or something. But like, I felt good on the bike. I just needed to have a bit more fitness. I was like, all right, okay, that's fine. Like, I can work on that. The fact is, I just felt good on my bike after feeling terrible on my bike for over a year. I was like, cool. Well, that's a step in the right direction. And then the next week I was 9th. And I was like, wow, that's nuts. But that was an interesting race too, because I was still building back the belief in myself that I could actually do it. Do you know what I mean? Like, I didn't believe it. I didn't believe I could do it at that point still, because I had shaken myself so hard the year before. I was like, how is this happening? Who is, you know, like, when you lose yourself so hard, you're like, who even am I? And then you come back to a race and you're doing well. You're like, I don't know if I can keep doing well. Like it was nuts, because I've always really backed myself. I've just been like, I know I can just do a good job here and I'll just do what I can do. And I was freaking out. I had to really manage my mind so hard, because I just didn't believe that I would be able to hold a good result yet. And I had to, like, and that was part of the build back in the season, was starting to believe that what I was doing was enough and just trust it. It was, yeah. So it was definitely really scary to return after that.
Did it feel like, despite that anxiety and an emotion around your ability to perform, did it feel better, healthier, like coming in with that curiosity rather than that approach to win? Did that curiosity allow you to deal with that in a better way?
Yeah, for sure. For sure. It was just, there was so much at that, those first two going on. Do you know, it was like pretty intense. Just so many things. It's like, you're back with the team, you know, you're figuring out the bike, working with different people, and nobody really gets what you've been through. So you're kind of just there doing your thing. But actually, it's a really huge deal for you to even be there and turned up. Mm-hmm. Actually have made it back to that start line. So it was like trying to manage all of that whilst also just being the first few races of the season, which are already very stressful anyway, just in terms of like nobody knows how fast they are. You know, it's just a kind of test the water scenario. So yeah, it was really, really intense. Really intense to come back to that.
Yeah, but it started to settle in a bit, I guess, once you'd got a few under your belt. And then after Blue Derby, we went to Pietra.
Mm.
And did you have a bit, was it a head knock in Pietra? Yeah. Which obviously you've got that, you know, your history with concussion and the challenges that's given you.
Yeah, I couldn't believe that. Because I'd done 2 months of real good work and I'd got new suspension on the bike and I'd put so much time into like getting it set up right and everything. Like I worked my ass off for 2 months to be ready for that block, like really went for it, because I was like, okay, we've done those first two races, we know where the weaknesses are, let's get into this and improve for the next one. Like, I'm keen, I want to, you know, I'm back, like, let's do this. And then like second stage, crash, smack my head, and I was like, oh, I'll rode down the rest of the stage like gently, testing everything, trying to figure out am I balancing or not balancing. And then once I got to the bottom, I knew. I was like, nah, you can't push through this. And then when I pedaled up the hill more and I started to get like way pressure in my head just from pedaling up the hill, I was like, yeah, you can't push through this. Even if it's not gonna be that bad, stopping now means that you've got a chance to come back. But if you continue, crash again, you're actually gonna have big problems. So it was just so annoying because you have to be so sensible with head injuries. But if you are, it works. But at the time, it's like, well, I'm fine and I could probably carry on and be okay. But it's like, yeah, but then you crash or you're out for even longer. And I was just annoyed because I was like, I'm finally getting going again. Like, I'm finally getting going again. And we're building quite nicely. And this has just happened. And I can't even show that. Like, if I'd broke my finger or something like that, I could at least show the team, like, I'm so determined to make this happen. I will ride through whatever broken bone I have. I don't even care. Do you know what I mean? And I was so ready to like show them how serious I was about this, because it's not easy to understand what I'd just gone through the last year. But if you see that, you go, oh yeah, she is actually serious about this, you know? And then I hit my head and there's nothing you can do about it. I'm like, yeah, I've got to go home. Sorry.
Yeah, that's horrible, eh?
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, and then I was really lucky, actually. I nailed it. I went back. The team was amazing. They tidied the pits up, got everything sorted out, packed my bike and all that, so I could just like get into a dark room, shut everything off, rest, drink lots of water, got my flight sorted out home. I went home, saw Chad Woods, our local physio guy that knows everything about head injuries. He sorted me all out. He was like, you're not concussed. It's coming from your neck, the symptoms you do have. Because I was, even in the airport, I had like sunglasses on, earplugs in, you know, like all this stuff, like being overly cautious because I was just like, I want this thing gone.
Yeah.
So to get that news from him was mint. We did a bit of work. We chested the heart rate after about a week and brought my heart rate up to see if there was any reaction to that. All my balance and everything was fine. So I got the all clear to crack into a race a week and a half later. So that was awesome.
Yeah, that's a mega recovery. Mm. And I guess that just comes from experience, right? You've been through it. You know, okay, we need to call this. These are the things we need to do. This is the person I'm going to go see. Like, that's paid back in a big way.
Yeah, massively. And I was so stoked because every time I've hit my head before, it's been a nightmare. So to like nail the recovery and get that sorted was like really reassuring that if you do the right work, like even if you feel okay initially, do you know what I mean? That's the big mistake that people are like, oh, but I don't feel too bad, so I'll just kind of carry on. And then it's like 2 days later, they're like absolutely cooked. It's like, it doesn't matter. You just need to shut everything down and just let it recover immediately. And then, you know, build back as and when, and seek professional advice, obviously.
Of course. Yeah, definitely. So how did the rest of the season pan out then from your perspective?
Well, the rest of that block was not good. It was not, this was not comfy. There was a lot going on. Anyway. And yeah, it was just was, yeah, it just wasn't a good block. And I was just like, oh no, I don't know what I'm going to do about this. Anyway, I just wasn't, basically, I didn't get on well with that force. Like, it was just a real struggle. I think this is a trend that we're seeing with bikes. They're getting too big. And I feel like for me personally, that bike was too big for me. And I just couldn't get along with it. Because I couldn't get my weight over the back or the front. It had to be one or the other. I didn't have weight over both of them. And so it was complicated to ride. Like, it didn't feel natural to me. And so it was just like bashing my head off a brick wall. And so I was just really demotivated with it because I was just like, can I even ride a bike? Like, what is going on here? And that's when we were allowed to get onto the sensor. And for me, and it's like people are like always asking like, what bike's great, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, it's all down to personal preference and your ride style. And the sensor worked so much better for me. Like, it just was a slightly smaller bike, smaller travel bike. And it just, I just gelled with it a lot better. So once I got back on that bike, I was like, oh, okay, I got this. Like, now I'm really accessing like that flow state that I know I can get to because I'm not having to pull weird shapes to try and get my weight over the right wheel. I'm just balanced on this bike already and I don't need to do anything weird. So that was great just to feel like that. And I did testing with both the bikes because it was important to see like this is actually faster. I kind of go for the feel anyway because if I feel better on the bike, I know I will be able to go consistently faster anyway. But we did the time in and it was immediately like, was it 5 seconds quicker over like under 3 minute track? Like straight off the bat. Okay. Like straight off the bat.
Any day, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I was like, okay, easy. Easy decision. So that was really exciting for me to be like, okay, cool. I've got a bike that I'm really gelling with now and we'll head to the last races of the season. And then the day before practice, it's like, yeah, sweet. There'll be no GT Factory racing next year. And I was like, guys, I'm really trying to get going here. I'm really, each time I'm trying to just get back a wee bit. We make a wee bit of progress and then we just get some curveballs coming in here that you're testing me and I'm coping. So there's been improvements.
This was in Leudenville, right?
Yeah, this was in Leudenville. Yeah.
How was that like completely out of the blue for you? I know the team, I get the impression anyway, the team wanted to tell people as soon as they could, but yeah, had you had any like inkling of it?
No. I knew that just knowing the way that the bike industry was and I was just looking at things and I was like, okay, well, if GT is going to have to be one of the brands that pull back, most likely they'll pull back on their enduro program and put more money into their downhill. Like that's, I mean, they've got one rider in their enduro program at the moment, so that would be the easiest one to kind of sort of move to the side sort of thing. So
yeah,
in the back of my mind I was like, that's a potential, but for them to drop the whole program was a bit like, whoa, this is really gnarly. And I know they were trying to tell us as early as possible, but they were also trying to make it happen for as long as possible. So you know, they were trying to make something happen, so it was like, okay, we do just need to tell you guys now so that you know, and you can start having conversations while you're actually at the races, even though we're trying to make something happen. So it was just, but yeah, it was a big shock for us. And just like the night before practice, I was just like, oh. And it just became really real to me because I'd already been making peace with like, okay, I don't know what I'm going to do. Because even I'd had conversations before that with other brands and they were like, we're having to get rid of riders or we're investing in the downhill team, like, or, you know, we're getting rid of employees, so we can't really be investing in more riders. And I was like, okay. So I already knew, okay, I had to take a serious look at what I was actually going to do. And I was like, right, okay, well, you're going to have to get comfy with the fact that these could actually be the last two races of your career. And then when they got that news, I was like, oh, this has just got real. Like, this has got really real. So did practice, did the race, came 10th, was pretty stoked with that. Loved riding the sensor. Like, actually got a glimpse of old me on, like, stage 3 or 4 it was. And I was like, oh, yes. Like, we have still got this. Like, we've really still got this. And I knew, I was like, right, okay, now I just need to do another race before the last race of the season, because that's just going to help build that speed and get comfy back in that race zone again, because, okay, I've accessed it now. We need to do that again, get comfy in there, and then we'll hit the last one good. And then went to the Swiss Enduro Series, which is absolutely awesome, by the way. Really, really well-run races, really fun. Like, reminds me of, like, old-style enduro, where it's just, like, good vibes, good tracks, good people. And had the race of my life. Like, it was amazing. Like, absolutely amazing. It was like the closing of the chapter for me on reflection. But at the time, I was just like, I actually just raced like old me for the first time in probably 3 years, 2 years, whatever. Like, because when I was racing in 21, I was racing like that, but I was racing with a lot of stress. Whereas that time, I was just racing and racing how I know I can. And that was just like, okay, I don't care what even happens anymore. Even if I can't race ever again, like, I've gone to the depths of beyond rock bottom, and I've come back and I've performed in a way that I know is what I'm capable of. Sweet. Do you know? Yep.
Do you think the vibe of that event had something to do with that? Obviously, there's like, you were on this path back to riding like that anyway, but do you think the fun and the setup and the style of the event like helped? Because I everything plays together, right, into how you feel on the day.
Yeah, I think it was just me. I was just on my own. I was just there, just doing my thing. And I think everything that had happened, it just aligned to the point where I was with like Anita and Carol from like the old school enduro days. And yeah, I think I was just in perfect position. And it just allowed me to access it and believe in myself that I could do it. And I was really vibing with that bike. And as soon as I'm vibing, I can just shut my brain off and go, and it's great.
That's so, awesome.
I think definitely all of those things played a part for sure.
Yeah, that's cool. And then Chatel was the last round, wasn't it? Which people, I get the impression it was a pretty good venue at least. Like the trails were good.
Yeah, the trails are really good. The trails are really, really good. It was a bit of an unusual venue. In terms of like it's a kind of end of season, it's not really like where the town was, where the race village was. It was kind of a little bit janky, but like as a race, it was pretty cool. Like we went on an adventure. We went over the mountains and made our way back and stuff. So, and like we had a good mix of like bike park and natural trails. So yeah, there was just more going on, of course, for me.
Of course, yeah. So I guess you're in the position of trying to look to 24, and it sounded like you'd already had some conversations prior to that anyway. I guess your contract was like up at the end of the year with GT, right? Yeah. You'd have had to re-sign with GT or find another team. So you'd already started having conversations and realized the lie of the land was not necessarily going to be straightforward. But once you found out that GT definitely wasn't an option, had you like made the decision to hold off on that and just get the racing out of the way first? Or were you straight into like, okay, right, I need to start speaking to people? How does all that kind of progress?
Well, for me, because I came 10th, I was like, sweet, we're on one to potentially have a really solid end to the season. So I'm just going to focus all my energy on that. So that's what I did. And then there was more curveballs in my personal life, which then just made everything just be like, well, there is really only so much I can take, like, seriously, like, really, this is potentially the last race in my career, and there's all this other stuff going on too. I was like, really? Really?
Come on, now? Give me a break.
Like there's quite a few weeks after this. I'm not sure if you know about that, but like, you know, this week, if you could just leave me alone, like, I've got all this other time, we can sort all this other stuff out. Anyway, so yeah, it just became a completely surreal experience. Like, I was there, but I wasn't really there. I was given everything I could, but it was just like, just kind of quite an out-of-body experience of like, I'm leaving everything down, but I don't know where I am. Like, because nothing seems to really matter, really. Like, I'm potentially, there's a lot of things going on here, a lot of, like losing my job, and I don't know what I'm gonna do. now the whole future looks weird. So yeah, it was like just nuts, just nuts. So it was like quite a weird
to be going through that and like step onto the world stage in front of everyone and go and do that is it's pretty gnarly, eh?
Yeah. And it's like, it's totally part of being an athlete, but when it's like, I've potentially not got a job and I don't know what I'm going to do, you're like, oh, is this race even going to make any difference or what? there's so few options here. Like, unless I win this race, I don't see a way of that, like, this being, there being better options if you go another 10th. Do you know what I mean? So
yeah.
It was like, I laid down everything I had. There was just wasn't really a lot left there to give. So it was just like, I just tried to be, just tried to enjoy every moment, because I was like, maybe this is your last one and you just got to sit, you know. It was like quite a peaceful race, because I was just like, just gave everything in every stage and just was sort of floating down every one of like, wow, this, you know, I love this. Like, I absolutely love this. I love doing this. And I'm just going to enjoy each stage. Just going down the stage, I was like, man, I just love going this fast as I can down this track. Do you know? There was just like that. Like, nothing else really was mattering, but it was also just like, oh, what am I going to do? But I'm just going to try and enjoy this moment. And yeah. Yeah, you can't. It's hard to explain. Really hard to explain.
Surreal. And then straight into this off season, right? Of like, all the racing is turned off, all that kind of stress and things are gone. In theory, there's the ability to like take a bit of rest and some time for yourself and the body, sharpen the axe, so to speak. But then you've also got this problem of, like you say, well, at this point in time, I don't have a job. And that's scary, because this is everything I've done for the last however many years. How take us through, I guess, your off season that probably didn't feel much like an off season.
Well, I knew fairly quickly, because I've done the fight before of fighting for my career. And it was 2020. Half the brands I spoke to didn't even know what they were going to do, because they're like, we don't know if there's going to be racing. We don't know if we want to invest in this. So it was I knew the battle I was in for. It's like, it just was going to be a different conversation. It was going to be, well, we can't do it because we've got no money, blah, blah, blah. It's like, different reasons, same chat. And I was like, I have sent all those emails. I have made all of those proposals before. I have worked so hard to make that happen before, and I know what it takes. I'm not doing it again. I was like, I'm not doing it again. There's no way I'm doing it again, because also I know what I'm capable of when I'm doing it myself. You know, I've done a year where I did it myself. If the reality for me is I'm getting on in my career and I want to win one of these races, like, and I know I can do it, but I know also what I need in order to do it. And I did the math and I was like, not going to work out. And so I was like, okay, well, if you want to be a better bike racer, what's the best thing you could possibly do? And also, if you're not going to be racing, what's the most fun you could actually have? Like, I think you're due a bit of fun after all these years of all this crap that's been going on. So I was like, sweet, well, I'm going to go to New Zealand and I'm going to go to Queenstown and I'm going to ride my bike. Then I'm going to go to Whistler, because I love Whistler. And so that's what I did. I applied for visas so I could work. And so I was like, right, okay, I need a worst case scenario.
Yeah.
You know, because I still spoke to different brands to see if I could, you know, propose different ideas and stuff like that. But I was like, I need a worst case scenario. If none of this works and I have to do a normal job, what's the worst case scenario? Right. Working holiday visas, New Zealand, Canada, we'll go summer to summer, we'll get better at biking, we'll do some normal work, we'll see what that's like, and meet new people and just like enjoy life for a little bit. So that's what I've done. So I fairly quickly realised what was going on. I didn't put too much into it, and I think this is a big part of like, everybody would want to be a pro cyclist, you know, you want to be a world champion, but it's not about what you want to be. Is about what you're willing to do in order to get there. And I knew what I was willing to do and not do, and I was not willing to do that. You know, I knew how much suffering it would take, and I have been determined enough to push through that before, and to do whatever it takes, and that's meant. But that was my limit this time. This time I was like, no, not this time. So I think we'll see a lot of athletes pushing through that because in order, because they're willing to put themselves through that, and that is mint. And we'll see a lot of people who just won't. And that, I think both are equally good options. We spoke about that before, sort of celebrating people that can go, okay, I'm willing to suffer through everything in order to achieve this. Cool, crack on. But also celebrating the people that go, yeah, that I've hit my limit, actually. That's enough.
No. Yeah.
And that's all good.
Yeah, you're going to have a much better year than you would going the other route, probably. You've been there. You know what that feels like. You know what it's like to deal with and what it can do to you, your body and your mind. I vote the New Zealand Canada version. It sounds amazing.
Well, like, I'm spending all my money. Okay, well, I'm going to go and do the EDR. How much better of a bike ride am I going to get doing that? Because I'm going to have to train all the time and then do these races that you can get puncture on and the race is gone. Whereas I can be out here doing all this riding, do some little races if I want to. And just that time on the bike, free of any expectation, free of having to be on a training program and be tired all the time and just ride. Oof. That's what's going to get you better. That's going to be a much better investment on my part in my business, which is being athlete. So,
yeah.
I'm stoked on it. I'm real happy with my choices.
When did you go out? It took a little while to get it all over the line in the end, didn't it? With visas and stuff, I think. I think you wanted to go a bit earlier maybe, but...
Yeah, the visas took a really long time to come through, so I had to endure some Scottish winter. But, you know, I also believe that everything happens for a reason, and I had a lot more quality time with my family and my friends at a time when I actually really needed them, because otherwise I was just running away from my problems. So it was nice to, like, get that quality time with people that are really important to me and support me no matter what. So that was really valuable. And then I came out here much more ready for a new start.
Yeah.
And yeah, just got straight into it. And so
sweet.
I didn't come
Where
out.
Where are you in Queenstown?
Yeah, I'm in Queenstown.
Oh, nice.
The riding here is so good. Like, it is so good. I've had some of the best days on a bike of all time here. It just, even in the last few months, like, it's been great. Yeah.
Unreal. And so how are you making ends meet? Like, what does like the program look like for this year?
So I sold everything I owned as much as I could before I left. And then I have been working a normal job. I'm actually working in a retail store doing retail, folding t-shirts and stuff. Which has actually been really nice to meet just like and meet and work with normal people, like like not these like what is it, A-type personality, what is it, just like nice people just to work with. It's been really good. We do like pub quizzes and stuff, and yeah, I've done
you become normal, Katie. What's going on?
I know, it's great. And then been doing a little, just some odd jobs here and there. I worked with my friend Mops doing some building, so I've done some
cool, like,
with tools and stuff. Nothing gnarly, but like
high vis and a hard hat and all that jazz.
Rivet gun. Boof. I can rivet. Oof. I can drill and I can rivet. So there you go.
That's amazing. And Queenstown's quite a mountain bike destination, certainly in the summer. Like, are people coming into the shop that you work in and being like, oh, it's Katie Winton? Like, is there any of that going on?
No, thankfully. There's not actually. It's really nice. I just get to talk to instead of people talking to me about me, I get to talk to people about them and what they're doing, what they're doing on a holiday and stuff like that. And it's really interesting. I really like it. I hear where they've been and all that. And I'm just the girl that works in the shop. It's really, really refreshing. So,
yeah, that's cool. That's cool that you're like enjoying, like, yeah, stepping out of the limelight, I guess, to an extent. Like,
oh,
the pressure
massively,
must feel like way reduced.
Yeah, it's great. It's so great. I mean, I don't like having to being told when to turn up and stuff like that. Like, I've realized pretty quickly that I like being my own boss and doing whatever I like. But that's all right. I've experienced it now. So I'm going to be, well, I am doing something about it. So I won't be here forever. This is just a moment in time. I keep telling myself that when I'm folding my t-shirts. You should see my t-shirt stacks, though. I'm real good at folding t-shirts now.
You got it on lock. Wicked. So obviously you're riding a lot. That's awesome.
Not as much as I want to, but yeah.
No?
When
okay.
I, when
how
I
are you
do
finding?
Ride,
yeah. How are you finding fitting it around like a 9-to-5 or whatever? Because I guess that's the challenge that most of us face. We're always like, we'd like to do more, but it's not always easy.
Yeah. yeah, it's really hard. I was like, oh, now I understand. Because I went from being not a worker to working 9 days in a row. And then I had one day off. And I was like, yes, sweet, now I can ride my bike. I literally just had to lie down. I was so tired. I was like, oh, no, this is a real problem. Then I did like another 6 days. So, yeah, I didn't do a lot of riding initially because I was like, man, I don't even know how to do this. But then after I did my first 9 days, I started being able to run in the morning and then I would be able to bike a bit in the afternoon. So, and now I've joined the gym because it's obviously dark now and I'm going to the gym in the morning and just starting to learn how and what works for me. But yeah, it's really hard and you're tired a lot. Like, I'm like, wow, phew, reality.
Yeah, it's a different tired, I guess. You're used to being tired all the time from training, but you're not used to being tired from work and trying to fit in some training or some riding.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And I think that's where being an athlete, the biggest bonus is that recovery time is so much better. It's like, I believe I can still do a decent amount of training if I wanted to around the work that I'm doing. I would just be cutting out a lot of sleep and a lot of like sitting down recovering time, which is what accelerates your gains, really. So, yeah, it's, I've got a whole new appreciation for everybody out there, especially the athletes that have to train full time whilst, well, like train whilst working and they still perform really well. Like, I mean, I always was like, that's sick. But now I actually have a bit more of an understanding of what they're actually going through. I'm like, okay, hats off to you.
Yeah, I guess you got a bit of a head start in that, you know, like, you know how to dial your nutrition, you know how to kind of recover and sleep well, you know what metrics work for you, if any, to sort of track where you're at and know when to push and when not. So you've got a bit of a
head start maybe on some people. That's the key. Like,
yeah, okay.
I also do it. Like, I know, okay, I need to be going to sleep now in order to make this happen, and I need to be eating this. Because I think a lot of people already know that, but they don't do it. And so then they're like, oh, I'm really tired. Or, oh, I'm not going to bother doing this session because I feel really weak. It's like, well, but you didn't eat anything yesterday. And so then you get like, then it gets on top of you. Whereas like, I've got that discipline from being an athlete that I can bring into, because you need it. Yeah. Like I've got, like I made my dinner tonight and I was also making my breakfast and my lunch for tomorrow because I know I'm getting up to get to the gym for six. Do you know what I mean? And I need my breakfast afterwards because otherwise I won't get through the day.
Yeah. On it.
Yeah, like, but like, you just, you know, you have to, but I love it. I absolutely love it. Oh, yeah. It's good.
Sweet. And you've been staying kind of connected to the sport, I guess. Like recently you were at Crankworx with, I think, your first experience being a media squid. Like, how did that come about?
Well, I've got a bit of a master plan at works here. Behind the scenes now.
Okay.
That will unfold over the, hopefully over the future. But I spoke to Darren Kinnaird at Crankworx because I know him from over the years and I just wanted some work experience really. And then he was like, well, actually, you're thinking about this role as a social media host. Do you think you'd be keen for that? And I was just like, what an opportunity. Absolutely. I don't know what that is or like if I'll even be any good at it or anything like that. But yes, I'll definitely do that. So I had a couple of meetings with Madison and we worked together on figuring out, you know, what that would look like and, you know, how we could work it in and stuff. So they already kind of knew roughly what they wanted, but it was like this amazing opportunity because they knew roughly what they wanted, but they didn't really know. And so there was a lot of creative freedom for me and I just wanted to improve my skill set. And so I was like, great, well, you don't know what you're expecting. I don't know what I can offer. So let's just go and jump in and try this. And it was fully like a jump in, sink or swim scenario. So when I got to Rotorua, it was just for Rotorua Crankworx. And I was like, okay. So I got there and I'd done a bit of planning and stuff like that, figured it out. And I was filming with Reese Ellis. I got him to hold the camera and help me out. So I put these first few videos together and I showed them to Madison and I was like, is that all right? And then she was just like, that is brilliant. And I was just like, I've been so nervous because I was like, I literally don't know what I'm doing. Like, because I'm just stabbing in the dark. I'm going, right, okay, well, here, see what you think of this. And so when she was like, that's mint, I was like, okay, well, I know roughly what I'm thinking. I know this kind of story that I want to tell for each day roughly. And we just sort of worked together and like, I had to do work in front of the camera, like trying to talk about, it was kind of like, so we've called it Crankworx with Katie, along the lines of my keeping up with Katie, but Crankworx with Katie. And so it's like, I'm at Crankworx and you're coming with me, and I'm going to take you behind the scenes and give you an insight into what's going on with the racing and the riders and just everything like that. So I got to do so much that week, and it was so sick. Like, fully experienced Rotorua. We did so much Maori stuff. Like, we did, went to all their old villages, understood how Rotorua even came to be with, like, volcanoes and everything. We got to know Tuoto better as well, like, and all his family heritage. So it was, like, so much deeper than just, like, racing. It was, like, and that's what I love about Crankworx, is it's so much more than just, like, here's an event. It's, like, it encompasses the whole area and tries to bring everything together as an event should. It should put back into the local economy and create the destination that these places actually are. So it was really, really cool to be a part of. The other really cool thing was I was in house with the Crankworx girls, like the women that work for Crankworx. They are rad. They're awesome. It's the first time I've been in a professional environment with professional women. Do you know what I mean? Like, I've been surrounded by like teams all my life, and working with bike brands where I work with guys. I work with guys all the time. I'm always working with men. That's just been what my life has been about. And then, apart from Tracy Mosley, like Tracy Mosley and Katie Wooster at Nukeproof, those are like the two women that I've worked with in my whole career. Anyway, so these women are amazing. Like, they're so rad. I was just like, felt so empowered. I was like, look at these women just like nailing their jobs. Like, I'm gonna go nail my job too. Like, it was so cool to be a part of that. And there's a lot of that in Crankworx too. And so it was like real cool to just like be like, wow, like this is really cool. Professional women doing professional stuff. Like, this is really, really rad. In the bike industry.
And the
industry
first women's slope style as well, which is cool.
Oh my god. I was like nearly crying, eh? Like, I had glasses on, but I had like tears in my eyes. When Caroline Buchanan came down, the first woman to hit that, oh man. And I was really interested, like, why is this so moving? And it was like, it's such a breaking of the barrier for women in sport in general. Like, we've had to, like, so much stuff in the last few years we've had to push, because it's been so normal for guys to just do the Paris-Roubaix, all this stuff, women breaking the barriers in order to do the first one of them. So to actually witness and be part of these women sending this slope style for the first time was just like incredible. But also with the whole thing that was going on with the guys, then the guys not ending up doing it, the fact that this was not advertised as a women only event, it was part of the slope style event, then the guys weren't doing it, all the people still turned up. And I feel like that's sick. Is one of the first times I've ever experienced it where people have turned up to see the women. Not because it's a women's event, because they came to see slopestyle. It just happened that there was women that were doing it. And I feel like I've certainly felt it through my career, like that kind of thing of like, you know, when you're fighting to try and get equal prize money, oh, but there's not the same amount as like same amount of riders as you, like as the men, and the time gaps are bigger, you're always just made to feel a little bit less than, you know, not the main show, or we got you along just because, you know, we should have women here. Even though that's not what's communicated, there's just a general feel of that. And so for like these women to like own the show and people to turn up anyway for this, I think sent a huge message to be like, we're mountain bikers. It doesn't matter whether we're male or female or in between, like, or anything. You can just turn up. Like, people just want to watch mountain biking, and we're just as good to watch. And it was just like so emotional to be like, wow, we can stand alone just as a slopestyle event, as a mountain bike event, whatever. It doesn't have to be this women only event. Come along and watch, you know. It's just like, yeah, this is slopestyle. There's women doing it.
Everyone does it. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's mint. Hardline the same, eh? Hardline Tassie with Lou and Gracie and all the other women that were there and didn't unfortunately get to like put down finals runs, but still like that was super cool. Like one of the gnarliest tracks in the world. And it's like, yeah, of course we can send that.
Yeah, totally. And people want to watch it. They're not fazed whether they're a girl or a guy. They're just like, sick, that's a mountain biker going and sending it. So it's cool. Amazing that this is the way that things are moving. It's really, really exciting. So it was really
And it sounds like you enjoyed being part of the media crew then.
Because I got, it was so cool because I got to use so many skills I didn't realize I could use, like editing videos, figuring out how to tell a story, like talking on the camera. It was like a proper mass puzzle. And I love puzzles. So yeah, it was really, really cool. Just like, just experiencing it from the other side of the tape. It was very uncomfortable though. I really wanted to be racing. Like I'm still racing.
Yeah, okay.
Like I was still at the side of the track. Like in the downhill, I was like, oh, dual slalom and stuff like that. I was like, oh, I just really, really want to ride my bike. But yeah, it was a great opportunity for sure.
Definitely. Will that continue then? Will we see you doing similar for Crankworx Whistler, or do we not know for sure yet?
Unofficially, I should be on the full tour now.
Sweet.
Yeah, day four. I got the, we want you for the rest of it. So we're just finalising that all just now, but I've had the unofficial invite.
Congratulations, mate. That's thanks. Awesome.
Yeah, I was stoked, eh? Because I was just like, I don't know if this is going to be what you want or not. But then they were really happy. So yeah, really cool.
Legend. That's cool. Yeah. And how do you feel? You mentioned obviously being at a race, not racing, is hard. And I guess like that potentially gets easier, especially once you get more and more into that like role that you're doing for Crankworx. But like enduro season will start soonish. Like how do you have like a plan of attack? Are you gonna, do you want to avoid it? Do you want to try and keep up to date with it? Like how are you feeling about not being part of that, that obviously you have been part of for, you know, well, since it kind of got
since
going,
it began, yeah.
Yeah.
It's going to be hard. That's going to be a really hard weekend to see that all happening and not be a part of it. I don't know what my plan of attack is going to be. Probably depends where I'm at and what I'm doing in terms of like actually where I am. I might even just be working, do you know what I mean? I think that's still going to be really, really tricky. So yeah, I don't have an answer for that yet. I'm just going to kind of go with it. And but I think that's what you learn from these experiences, that you just have to, it's emotional, do you know what I mean? And you have to acknowledge that and acknowledge those emotions, even if they're negative emotions, and just go, okay, well, that's just, I feel like that and that's okay, and just let it move through you. Because if I run away from it or whatever, you're going to end up with bigger problems. So just and I, like, that's part of how I got to where I am now, is by not running from how unhappy I was with the situation and just all of the things that come with like with loss, and it's still grief, do you know what I mean?
And
you have to hit, well, you don't have to, but I do, because I don't have time for feeling rubbish. So I hit things head on. And so I go, right, okay, well, let's have a look at this uncomfortable feeling and deal with it as quickly as possible so I can feel like this for less time. So that's probably the way I'll be hitting it. I'll be going, oh, yeah, these are all the feelings I'm having. Okay, cool.
That's good. It's healthy, man. Well, and talking about hitting things head on, you hit like some new events last year as well. You did a bit of marathon racing. You ticked off the Highland Trail 550. Like, do you see a future in other stuff? Like, what have you got any plans for, like racing events, that side of things at the moment, or is that all still in the future?
Oh, I've got plans, Chris. I've got plans. I've got big goals already. Yeah. They're to be confirmed. Well, not to be confirmed. I've already got some booked in already, but they shall be announced over the next wee while. But I've been enjoying some time off, but that is not going to last forever because I can't handle it. I've got a race. I'm such a racer. I need to race. And I knew that. It was just I was like, I'll give myself a wee bit of time and then we'll realign. So I've got a big master plan, like over the next sort of 6 to 9 months into 2025. So I'll start building that. We've got some other side projects going on, and yeah, this is not over yet, but I'm keeping my lips sealed at the moment. So you have to follow me on Instagram, people, and get on my YouTube and stay up to date with what's going on. But yeah, it's exciting. There's a lot more space for other things. And I think when you pull back from being so focused on one thing, you can start to get creative with other options. So
definitely. Interesting, mate. Well, it's been an absolute pleasure catching up. I appreciate your openness and honesty, because I think they're super important things for people to hear about and to be okay with accepting if those sort of challenges are finding their way into their lives, because it's often stuff that doesn't get talked about or gets swept under the carpet. So I think it's cool that you're open on that stuff. I'm excited to see a bit more of your Crankworx coverage, and very excited to see what happens with you and bikes over the coming years, because it sounds like there's some good stuff in the works. Like you say, if people want to hear that news when it drops, like, where are the best places for them to be keeping up to date with your plans?
Instagram at Miss Winton, and on YouTube just search Katie Winton, K-A-T-Y Winton.
Perfect. I'll stick links in the show notes so people can find that stuff nice and easily. But yeah, thanks, mate. It's been a pleasure. Enjoy what the future holds. We'll be watching and keen to see what you end up doing in the future.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me on again.
Nice. Always a pleasure, mate. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, that's it for this episode with Katie. I really hope you've enjoyed it. A massive thanks to Wahoo for supporting this episode. Wahoo products have been instrumental in my personal fitness over the last few years. What's more, they keep getting better with software updates, the most recent of which adds the ability to control your music from your Wahoo bike computer and shortly to control your GoPro too. So no more post-ride regrets when you realise you've not managed to press record. Check out the whole range over at wahoofitness.com. Also, a massive thanks to Canyon. Are you looking for a new ride? Well, the Canyon Trail Sale has started, so you can shred for less and save big on your next bike. With no better way to start your season than with a brand new world-class mountain bike, you can save up to 30% on your dream Canyon. Head over to canyon.com now to find out more. If you'd like to support the podcast, that could be via a regular donation at patreon.com/downtimepodcast, by grabbing yourself some merch from downtimepodcast.com/shop, by sharing the episodes with your friends or online, or by subscribing to my YouTube channel at youtube.com/@downtimepodcast and sharing the video some love with likes and comments to help the channel grow. Stay connected by following the podcast. Hit that button in your podcast app now or visit downtimepodcast.com/follow. Don't forget to follow on Instagram and Facebook too, where we're at Downtime Podcast. And for that extra dose of downtime, sign up to our newsletter at downtimepodcast.com/newsletter. That's it for today. We're going to have another awesome episode coming up really soon. But until next time, get out and ride.